left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Kept away, and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score!
Jones. Watford for the win.
Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news, notes, and nods to the past. I am your host, Jared Morris. This episode of Podcast on the Brink, as always, is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. Go to assemblycall.com/live as soon as every IU basketball game ends and join me and my co-hosts Ryan Phillips, Andy Bottoms, and Will DeWitt for the Assembly Call IU postgame show, where we break down every little detail of the IU game that we all just got done watching. Not all of them are as much fun as the one after that recent Michigan game, but they all are certainly interesting and insightful, and we hope that you will join us. And of course, after you open that page up in your browser, go to insidethehall.com and get all the rest of your postgame coverage, from Alex's reaction to Ryan Carrazza's minute after, to the postgame interviews with Tom Crean and the players, and then the next day with Alex's five takeaways, Ryan Carrazza's film session. Everything that you could want to know about that IU game, you will get at the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. Well, this is episode number 109 of Podcast on the Brink, and we are going to dedicate this episode to the 109 assists that Keith Smart racked up in the 1986-87 season. And of course, the assists that Smart racked up in that season aren't what people remember about his 1987 season. It is, of course, encapsulated in one shot, the shot, Keith Smart shot in the 1987 National Championship game to defeat the Syracuse Orangemen 74-73, a shot that certainly lives in the lore of Indiana basketball, college basketball, and simply sports. One of the most famous individual plays in sports history. And Keith Smart, actually, if you haven't heard, back in December, had to undergo surgery for a very rare form of skin cancer that he was diagnosed with. It's so rare that it's literally one in a million. And there, as Keith said, there are only 1,000 cases in the U.S., a very rare occurrence. It affected his cheek, and there were no initial symptoms, but then it became very visible once it manifested itself. But by all reports that I've read, Keith had surgery, is back. He's an assistant coach for the Miami Heat right now, so he is back at work, seeming to do well. And we hadn't yet had an opportunity to express our best wishes to Keith as he recovers from this. So let's take this opportunity to do that now. But obviously a scary situation, but great to see that Keith is back and doing well. All right, well, on this episode of Podcast on the Brink, we are going to look back at Indiana's phenomenal victory over Michigan. Alex Bozich actually called in on his drive home from Chrysler Arena. He made the trip there for the first time. And so we talk, of course, about the run, the big 28-0 run by Indiana. But even more important than that, the leadership shown by the seniors and the precociousness shown by Indiana's freshmen in the moments leading up to that run that really set the stage. We dissect that. And we talk about Max Bielefeld's performance and how he was received by his ex-teammates and fans in Michigan, as well as a really bizarre statement that John Beilein made before the game that almost made me fall out of my chair. And then we also talk a little bit about Yogi, a little bit about Troy, and look ahead to Penn State. All of that and more right now on this episode of Podcast on the Brink. All right, and I'm joined on this episode of Podcast on the Brink by Alex Bozich, who is currently in his car driving back from Ann Arbor after that wonderful Indiana performance over Michigan. Alex, how you doing?
Jared, I must say, this is a much more pleasant car ride home than after the Duke game. Let's just say that.
Now, have you been to Chrysler Arena before?
No, this is actually my first time. Just in previous years, you know, other Jordan Littman went up and Justin Albers has gone up, so I never really had the opportunity to go up. So I drove up yesterday, and my first trip there. Really, I was really surprised. I knew they had renovated, but really, really nice arena, especially the interior part. You know, the what word am I looking for? Some of the concourse area.
That's yeah, yeah.
Well, sorry, the concourse area, really super nice and renovated, and also the just the interior, the actual arena part. I mean, brand new seats everywhere. Just a really nice, not really a bad seat in there. Just a really nice arena. They did a great job with it, and I was a little surprised at how many empty seats there were, just from the standpoint of, you know, Michigan's playing pretty well this year. I know they're not ranked, but I think they only had four losses coming in, and there was quite a few seats empty in the upper part. But overall, pretty good atmosphere. Not as loud as maybe as I anticipated, but just a, you know, a really nice venue there that they've got, and a really great win for Indiana.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. I mean, obviously the atmosphere in the second half wasn't very good for Michigan, and we saw all the fans exiting very early. But what was it like early? You know, when Michigan went on the run, they're up 15-4. It looks like they've got a lot of momentum. Was it loud? Was it intimidating at all in there?
I mean, it was loud. It wasn't like Mackey Arena loud or the Breslin Center loud or even Cameron Indoor Stadium loud, but there was energy in the building. I think a lot of the fans were kind of jazzed up early when Jim Harbaugh was kind of making his rounds around the arena, shaking hands, and you know, obviously everyone there is looking forward to you know, signing day, which is today. A lot of the, you know, obviously a football school, but there was it was decent, but I never really felt like they had, you know, they had the lead 15-4, but I never really felt like Indiana was going to get completely blown out. I think maybe one of the key mistakes that I kind of noticed that Michigan made when they got that lead is that, you know, they took Derek Walton out of the game, which I didn't really understand. I know that they're kind of short on depth, so maybe Beilein was just trying to, you know, buy some minutes there, and, you know, he's only playing six or seven guys really with any regularity. But I thought, you know, in talking to Dylan Burkhardt, who runs UM Hoops, you know, a lot of IU fans come through with that site and read it. That was one of the things we kind of talked about after the game. Didn't make a lot of sense to take Walton out at that point because, you know, I think really the engine that makes Michigan go. And, you know, they had that 11-point lead and they take him out. And then I think Indiana, you know, called that timeout and was able to get some momentum back pretty quickly. And from there, as we'll talk about with the run, it just kind of snowballed there for Michigan. They just really had no answer for what Indiana was able to do offensively. And, you know, it was coming from everywhere. And defensively, they started to lock up as well.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about that run. But I want to get to the part before the run, what set the stage for that, which you just alluded to, which was when Indiana was down 15-4 and they call that timeout and, you know, Tom Crean gets on Yogi Ferrell. And right out of that timeout, it was like Indiana seniors decided, hey, you know, we dug ourselves a little bit of a hole, but we're going to be okay. Let's go. And Yogi scored four straight points. The next time down, Zeisloft hit a three. Then Bielfeldt hit another three. And that was kind of what was the impetus for getting the game turned around and getting that run going. How important was that, you know, in a tough road environment, in against the best team Indiana's played in Big Ten play, for the seniors to step up like that and settle the team down?
I mean, absolutely huge. It's something that was missing a year ago as far as being able to do that on the road. I mean, you know, the other day, I asked Boogie in the post game of the Minnesota game, you know, when they got down late in those final 4 minutes, you know, is this a game that the team last year or even the year before that would have won? And he didn't really want to compare it to previous year's teams, but, you know, I personally, my belief is, you know, that game, the Minnesota game, they would have wilted and lost. And I think yesterday's game in previous years would have been a game where it snowballed and they were down 20 or 25 before you know it. So that shows the maturity and growth. It shows that there's not a lot of panic in this team. You know, they were down even the Wisconsin game. You know, they had some moments where you thought maybe they were going to kind of fold and get beat, and they took that game to overtime. So, you know, I think one of the things we're learning about this team is you don't really have to worry about their fight or you know, their ability to kind of overcome obstacles within a game. I think they've proven now through 10 Big Ten games, regardless of the competition level, you don't go 9-1 by, you know, just kind of letting teams do whatever they want. I mean, it was a good timeout by Crean. It was, I'm not sure exactly what he said, but I'm sure with some of those guys, he doesn't really have to say much. It's just like, what are you doing? Let's kind of get back to the game plan. And sometimes that's really all it takes, especially when you have experienced guys. You know, Yogi Ferrell's been in that building before. He's won in that building before. So, I'm sure he pulled the guys together, too, at some point and just kind of said, you know, let's just keep chipping away here. And it was obviously a huge thing for them to just kind of respond right at that moment, because you don't want to go into halftime on the road, you know, being down 10 or 15, and Indiana just, you know, none of us, I don't think, saw it coming. They just exploded from that point.
Yeah, and after the seniors stepped up and made those plays that I just mentioned, it was the freshmen who stepped up next, because it was right after that that OG Anunoby had his patented steal and dunk, and his defense really started to change the game, especially on Zach Irvin, where his length and just his ability to move and show really good defensive awareness really allowed him to harass Zach Irvin in that first half. And plus, you had that great sequence where Juwan Morgan, you know, played great defense, forced a steal on one end. Yogi ended up getting the steal. Juwan runs the floor, and Yogi just throws him a beautiful bounce pass that Juwan converts into 2 points. And that's what set the stage then and got that big run going. But before we get to that, how impressed are you with those two freshmen? We know about Thomas Bryant, and he's played some big minutes and some big games. But how impressed are you with two freshmen like OG Anunoby and Juwan Morgan, who didn't play a lot of minutes in the non-conference schedule, but now we're coming up and seeming to step up and play their biggest in some of Indiana's big moments? And certainly last night on the road against Michigan was a big moment, and those guys were right there in the first half making big plays.
I mean, you make a good point. You know, through a good chunk of the non-conference season, it didn't really look like Indiana was going to get much of anything from either guy. And now they're integral pieces on this team. I think the thing that's impressed me about most about both of them is that they can guard multiple positions. I mean, you know, OG can, he's long enough and athletic enough to guard in the perimeter, but he can also, you know, hold his own in the post. Juwan is versatile from the standpoint of he can really affect, you know, shots around the back at basket, but he also moves well enough to guard on the perimeter. You know, that was one of the things I asked Tom Crean about post game, specifically about OG with his defense. I thought on Zach Irvin there for a pretty long stretch kind of fueled Indiana's run, because Irvin was just kept jacking up shots and OG was right there not letting him get comfortable. A lot of his shots were missed, and then when he did try to go to the rim, there were other guys there to kind of help and bother him. I thought Indiana's length overall really bothered Michigan. And once Indiana kind of, you know, sunk their teeth in and started making shots, Michigan, it just kind of looked like they were beginning to panic and they lost confidence. And I think you can point to both of those guys, just the energy they brought to the game. You know, they don't need the ball on offense to really be effective. They're not guys that you have to run plays for. OG's going to, you know, get his steal and dunk on the other end once a game or once every other game. And Morgan runs the floor, but you don't really have to necessarily get him involved. You know, maybe he'll get an offensive rebound to put back here and there. And, you know, you need guys like that when you've got, you know, three or four other guys who can fill it up from the perimeter and like to have the ball in their hands. If you have two guys like that who are just kind of know their role and play it well, that can be very valuable. And, you know, I don't think we can mention the defense enough, because for two freshmen to be that solid defensively, kind of based on what we saw last year with Indiana's team defensively and what we saw the early part of this season, it's not easy to be that solid, and those guys have been really good and I think exceeded expectations just kind of based on where they were early in the season.
Yeah. Well, and you have to credit Tom Crean some there too, right? I mean, I think Morgan was a top 100 recruit, but no one was just falling over themselves excited about these two guys. Obviously, Bryant was the headliner, but I mean, these guys have come in and really surpassed, I think, what anybody expected of them. And I think that, again, shows some smart recruiting by Tom Crean, especially with Anunoby, an ability to pinpoint a guy's skill level and ability to grow when perhaps other people can't see it.
Yeah, I mean, Anunoby, you know, I've admitted this on previous podcasts. I didn't think he was going to be anywhere near this type of player as a freshman. I mean, early in the season, I kind of thought it was going to be a year kind of where he would just kind of learn the ropes a little bit, maybe get spot minutes here and there, but not play that much. But no doubt you have to credit Tom Crean. I mean, if you're going to if you're going to, you know, criticize him for some of the recruiting misses or some of the guys he's taken that maybe shouldn't have, I mean, you definitely have to credit him for finding this guy. I mean, I know Iowa was really high on Ananobi, and you kind of look at their team this year, and, you know, he's got some under-the-radar guys that are really performing. So Iowa obviously saw something there too, but Cream was able to kind of get in there and, you know, establish position early and be able to, you know, when his recruitment really took off, you know, kind of put himself at the forefront of it and kind of close the deal. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's kind of developed guys that maybe were a little bit under the radar, even going back to his Marquette days, and made them, you know, guys with similar skill sets, you know, length, athleticism, that maybe needed a little bit more polish to their game. You know, that's kind of the definition of what Ananobi was coming in. And the thing to me, and, you know, it's if you watch the post-game videos, specifically last night, you'll know that OG doesn't really say anything. And, he's the man of one or two word answers, and I learned that firsthand back in April at the Derby Festival game. You know, we talked to him after one of the practices, and he was just giving us yes or no answers, and I was like, come on, OG, give us a little more. But last night I asked him, you know, just basically, you know, it's uncommon for a freshman to just come in like he has in these road games and be as confident and ready to play and make plays without hesitation. And he basically just, you know, I asked him about that, and he just gave credit to his teammates and his coaching staff. But I think that's something that's unique to him, maybe a little bit different from other freshmen we've seen in the past. You know, that he doesn't seem to be fazed at all by the big moment. Maybe it's just he doesn't know any better, or, you know, just doesn't think about it. But we've seen other freshmen come in and really have tough games on the road, and I'm not saying that he won't, but he just seems to feel like he belongs immediately when he gets on the court, and he just starts playing. I mean, it's pretty remarkable to watch. Just you know, some of the things he's been able to do defensively this year are pretty staggering. I mean, when you look at kind of what he was able to do at Assembly Hall against Nigel Hayes, there's been a couple other games where Tom Green's thrown him in there on certain guys for stretches, and he's shut him down. So it's pretty amazing, and definitely credit Green for finding him and bringing him into the system and making him a contributor right away.
Yeah, and it's not surprising for a freshman to do that in this day and age of college basketball, because we see that. But it does seem unprecedented for a guy that was, you know, a sub 200 recruit, and we're talking in preseason about should they redshirt him, to come in and make this big of a splash and seemingly develop this quickly. It's a credit to the coaching staff and certainly a credit to him. But he's been huge, and I think he's a guy that has to be playing 20-plus minutes a game. And I don't know whose minutes you take away, but Indiana is better with him on the floor. And so I think we'll start to see that. He played 20-plus against Minnesota. He would have last night, but the game got out of hand, so I think he only got 19. But, I mean, he's got to be on the floor for Indiana, and I think we're seeing the coaching staff start to realize that. Now, we've gone 14 minutes, and we haven't yet talked about the run. And I think for the rest of this season, and maybe for many seasons to come, we will refer to Indiana's spurt to end the first half and to begin the second half as simply the run. Because, I mean, I want to ask you, Alex, you've seen a lot of basketball, and we've seen a lot of Indiana runs at home where the Hoosiers just blitz an opponent. They start shooting well, the crowd gets into it, you know, the opponent doesn't know what happened, and you look up and it's, you know, a 20-point run, a 22-point run. But last night, Indiana did it against a pretty good team. This is a top 40 team that was, you know, one game behind Indiana in the Big Ten standings, or two games, whatever it was, but, you know, a team that had been playing well. And Indiana was down by 10 early in the game, and they somehow turn that around and go on a 28-0 run. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No, I've never seen anything like it. And I asked Max Bielfeld after the game if he'd seen anything like it. He said no. He said, you know, he's been a part of 10-0, 15-0 runs. You know, I think the thing that was most impressive about it was not just the scoring. It was to me, the defense, to do that against a top, you know, I'm pretty sure Michigan came in, and they're 16th now, maybe. I don't, you know, obviously don't have my computer in front of me, but I think they were a top 15 adjusted offensive efficiency team coming into the game.
Yeah.
To hold them scoreless for that long of a stretch is very impressive. know, I know Michigan's not ranked. I know they're missing Caris LeVert, but they also 3 weeks ago, yesterday, beat Maryland at home without Caris LeVert. So this isn't like, you know, going into Rutgers or Minnesota or, you know, a lesser team and blitzing them. This is going into a team arena of a likely NCAA tournament team, a team that can score as well as, you know, basically anybody in the Big Ten, a team that really doesn't turn it over and beat themselves. And this is just an absolute mauling. I mean, they, you know, I didn't necessarily recognize that it had been that big of a run because, you know, as you're watching the game, you're not really thinking necessarily, you know, how big of a run, you know, when it ended, and, you know, you kind of look back at the numbers, I mean, it's just insane. I mean, they had, I think, seven different guys score. Michigan, I think, in the same stretch as I wrote in Five Takeaways, had six different guys miss a shot. They stopped turning the ball over. They were contesting shots. I mean, Michigan had no answer for them in transition. I mean, they were missing shots. Indiana was getting the rebound and going right back down and just scoring. And you could see kind of as it was going along, the confidence building. If you look at some of the pictures from the game last night, I mean, you got guys like jumping up and down, celebrating, smiling as they come back down the floor. I mean, you just don't see that happening very often in any Big Ten game, let alone a road game. So Michigan, I think, had lost one home game coming into the last night. You know, that was early in the season against Xavier, which is a really, really good team. So for Indiana to do that, I mean, I think it was their most impressive performance of the season, and you just don't see a run like that happening, especially on the road.
You know, I was impressed with Max's performance last night, too. You mentioned him. I mean, it wasn't an overly impressive performance from a stat perspective. I think he had 5 points, something like that. He did lead Indiana in rebounds with 7. But I was impressed in the second half with the fact that, you know, going into Michigan, that he's going to want to have a big game. And he's going to want to, you know, get his shots up, especially shoot from deep, since Michigan didn't let him do that all that much. And he's mentioned, you know, having the freedom now to do that. And I thought there were several times in the second half where he had an opportunity to put up a shot where no one would have batted an eye, especially given the score. And yet, it's like he thought about it, he decided to stay patient, didn't shoot it, and each time he was able to find his teammate for an open bucket. Once it was Robert Johnson on a great cut. I don't remember who it was the other time. But I just thought it was a great sign of maturity, a great sign of selflessness and a team-first attitude in Max that you know how much he wants to score, and yet he never seemed to press. He never seemed to try and do too much. He just played his game. The whole team played their game, and it led to this just wonderful team performance. What did you think of Max's play in his first trip back to Chrysler, and how was the reaction to him from the fans?
Well, before the game, I was standing down by the court kind of waiting for him to come out with Zach Osterman of the Indy Star. And, you know, it was when he first walked out, he kind of was just going to go down to the other end and, you know, start warming up with his teammates. But, you know, each Michigan guy kind of stopped him, and, you know, he said hi to all of them and exchanged hugs and pleasantries. You could tell those guys really care a lot about Max, and obviously he was, you know, a big part of their program for 4 years. But, you know, I don't think they're leaving that game last night. There wasn't, you know, we were kind of in a tunnel there doing the player interviews, and all the players were there with their families, and that we talked to Max and OG and Rob. There wasn't a guy with a bigger smile on his face than Max Bielfeld. You could just tell that he was genuinely excited, not only to be back, but to come back and get a win over Michigan. You know, a program where, you know, let's be honest, he wanted to be there this year. They didn't want him anymore. So he took the opportunity to find the best fit for him. That ended up being in the Big Ten in Indiana. And, you know, you could tell that he really wanted to win and be successful. I was kind of interested to see, like, when the game started, you know, when he first got in, to see if, you know, maybe he would press a little bit too much, especially if, you know, if Indiana were down, or, you know, he would try to do too much. But to your point, you know, he kind of let the game come to him, played smart, kind of that's what we've grown used to seeing from him. And I think you make a great point. He's a very unselfish player who it's not hard to see why he's a good teammate and guys like him, and you know, his leadership obviously has been, I'm sure, maybe a little bit of an underrated key in Indiana's success this year. You know, you talk about seniors, you talk about Nick Seisloff, you talk about Yogi Ferrell, you know, he's right in that group too, because okay, he's won at a high level. He's been a part of some really good teams at Michigan, and I'm sure that a lot of those experiences he's been able to bring to Bloomington and really help this team. So, it's hard not to be happy for a kid like that who is able to go back to a place where, he played 4 years and was a big part of that program, and now he's doing it with a different team, and for him to get a win, he was even kind of in the tunnel there after he's done talking to us. He was there talking to Spike Albrick and Andrew Dockich, and I'm assuming a couple other guys from Michigan who he's still obviously close friends with and tight with. So I think as far as from a Max Bielefeld perspective, last night couldn't have gone any better.
All right, so I'm going to tell you something, and it's going to sound absurd, but I promise you that it's true, and I want to get your reaction to it. So before the game, during Fish's talk with the opposing coach, he talked with John Beilein, and at one point, Beilein was talking about the makeup of his team and how it's young, and he said, and I quote, I swear he said this, "I'm just dying to get another senior on my roster." And my jaw dropped, and I about fell out of my chair thinking, well, you just ran off a really good senior who would have been on your team this year. Like, I don't know what reaction you can have to that, but I mean, am I missing something, or is that just a totally absurd statement for him to make?
Well, I'll say this, and I've talked to some folks about this. I thought Greg Doyle, wrote a pretty good column yesterday in the Star, just talking about, giving Beilein a little bit of heat for, not wanting to keep Max, but then not wanting him to go within the Big Ten. I thought that was pretty spot on what Doyle wrote. For all the people that say that Tom Crean runs off players, things like that, the criticism that he's run off guys. I think it happens everywhere. I think it's kind of an unfair criticism of Crean, but in this situation, going back to the fact that some of the things that Beilein has said about this are just strike me as really bizarre. He talks about, I think earlier in the week, that he wanted to go younger and play some of the younger guys. Well, two of the younger guys he's talking about are Moritz Wagner, who's a kid from Germany, who played a little bit last night, got a quick foul, and he got a quick hook. The other one's DJ Wilson, who he redshirted last year and is barely playing this year. And you look at, what Ricky Doyle gives them off the bench, which isn't much. I mean, Mark Donnell has kind of saved them in the post, but I just don't see any logical reason how he actually thought that Bielefeld wouldn't have been able to help this team. Maybe, to me, there's something missing from the story. And I don't think, it's interesting. I was talking last night before the game with someone that covers Michigan, and, I won't say their name because it was, a little bit, private conversation. But the thing that the anecdote that I took from it was Beilein, before last season, I think, with Max's injuries the first 3 years at Michigan, he wasn't a big part of the roster from a playing time perspective. So last year, before the year, as I understand it, he pretty much, I think, told Max, this is going to be your fourth year. Well, I don't think they realized that Max was going to be as healthy and as effective as he was, but from what I picked up, it was more of a pride thing with Beilein. He kind of told Max before the season that he wasn't coming back, and so he didn't want to kind of go back on that. And I think Max kind of held out hope that as the year went on and he played well, that Beilein was going to change his mind. He never did. So, as much as Beilein wants to say he has no regrets, I just don't see how you can look at the situation and say, I really wish I had a senior on the roster. And then look at a guy who's a fifth-year senior who's probably Indiana's best or one of its best bench players right now coming into your building and help giving you a beating. I mean, it's just really head-scratching comments. So that would kind of be my long-winded reaction to that. But the whole thing still strikes me as really, really confusing as to why they decided to let him go.
One performance that's kind of getting lost in the shuffle, just with how great the run is and the play of OG and Max being back at Chrysler, was Yogi Ferrell, who, again, started off kind of shaky. Tom Crean takes that timeout. And then I thought Yogi was terrific after that, and he finished with 17 points. He had 9 assists. He's actually been struggling a bit in the assist department since that Illinois game, but really got back to playing the kind of game that is when he plays that way, Indiana is most effective. And I think you and I have spent some time talking about how Yogi doesn't seem to be getting the national attention. And the truth is, that is all going to take care of itself if Indiana keeps winning games like these that are higher profile against better teams, especially on the road, and he keeps playing well. I think that'll take care of itself. But, you know, it's interesting finding new ways to kind of put what Yogi is doing into context. And I never thought that I would do this. I really didn't, because it seems kind of like IU basketball blasphemy. But I decided this morning to go look up what Isaiah's numbers were his sophomore year, just to see how Yogi's numbers compared this year. I didn't really, you know, my hypothesis was they might have compared favorably, but I wasn't sure. And if you look at what Isaiah did as a sophomore, he averaged 16 points, 5.8 assists, 3.1 boards, and 35 minutes a game. Yogi this season is averaging 17.4 points, 5.8 assists, 4.2 rebounds, and playing 34.1 minutes. And obviously the big difference between the two guys is Isaiah led his team to a national championship. Yogi has yet to do that, and we'll see how far he can lead this team. But I'd like to get your reaction. I mean, to me, it doesn't seem as ridiculous now talking about those guys in the same sentence. Clearly, Isaiah is higher in the pecking order, and it'll be really hard for Yogi to do anything that will allow him to jump over Isaiah. But for the first time, based on how the way Yogi is playing and leading, it doesn't seem ridiculous to me to talk about those guys in the same sentence. Do you agree or do you disagree?
I know it's so hard to compare players from different eras, just because the game's so different now than it was then. I mean, I think the best thing to do in this situation is probably look at them as obviously separate cases. And I think in the last, you know, definitely in the last 15, 20 years, he's the best point guard at Indiana. And that's really saying something to me. I think his growth continues to be really impressive in a lot of areas. You know, we have openly talked about, questioned his leadership the last couple of years. I've seen nothing this year that, you know, that tells me that he's nothing short of a really good leader at this point. I think to be considered a great leader, he's going to have to continue to have performances like he did last night and continue to help Indiana win games against good teams and, quite frankly, lead Indiana to a deep NCAA tournament run, because that's what people remember the most. You know, as much as they would remember the 2013 Big Ten team, a lot of people think, you know, back about the Syracuse loss, opportunity lost. And I think this is kind of Yogi's chance to write his own story. He's got the thing that he has going for him in this college basketball season is it's wide open. Indiana definitely has the talent to make a deep NCAA tournament run. You know, there's no team that you look at on paper and says Indiana for sure cannot beat that team. Last year there was plenty of teams that you would say if Indiana gets this team on a draw, they're not going to beat them. So, you know, I don't have a problem, you know, comparing, you know, he's definitely one of the best point guards in Indiana history. You know, I don't want to be unfair to Yogi and, you know, but have him live up to the standards of, you know, obviously one of the greatest players in Indiana history, one of the top five point guards probably in NBA history. But from, you know, comparing what he's doing this season, you know, I think it's totally fair. I mean, he's been unbelievable. I mean, I don't think there's any argument that he's going to be a first team All Big Ten performer. He should be in the conversation for Big Ten Player of the Year. Obviously, Udoff from Iowa is probably the front runner at this point. But you know, I think this is the cool thing when a guy stays for 4 years, because we watched Yogi as a freshman. He wasn't a great shooter. He made some questionable decisions. He was a totally different player now from what he is. Was as a freshman, so it's pretty cool to kind of watch his growth over 4 years and just how he's matured and come into his own. And there's no question he's going to go down as I think one of the 25, maybe top 20 players ever to play at Indiana.
Yeah, no, great points. So one more question about an individual for you from last night, and that's Troy Williams, who played about as badly as Troy can play for about the first 5-6 minutes of the game. He had 3 quick turnovers, a couple of fouls. I mean, one of those turnovers, he just dropped a pass out of bounds. In fact, that was his 4th turnover. And Indiana's run, in some ways, coincided with Troy going out and with OG coming in, replacing him, playing better defense, not making the mistakes on offense. And I thought once Troy, you know, kind of got himself together by, you know, by the time the big run started in the second half, I thought he played really, really well because I thought he did what he's good at. And the coaching staff didn't put him in as many positions to be handling the ball out front and to be, again, in positions that he's not that adept at handling this season. You know, he was moving without the ball. He was out running, hustling, had that alley-oop from Yogi, a couple of nice backdoor cuts. And it was just, it was one of those reminders, again, of, you know, what the Troy Williams experience is and how quickly he can oscillate between bad Troy and good Troy. But I thought we saw kind of an extended period there of good Troy while the whole team was playing well, admittedly. But I can't watch something like that and not help but just wish that he and even the coaching staff would understand what he's doing when he plays well and make him stick with that. Because when he does that and when he's not trying to create too much and dribbling with his head down and just wildly flailing at the basket, he can be a really effective player. And it just seems like too often this season, he's not doing that. It's like he forgets what he's doing when he's playing well. And I think that's one of those missing pieces that if that can be there consistently, now this Indiana team can go from a good, you know, potentially great team to an elite type team, you know, based on what we're seeing from all the other guys. And I'm just curious to get your thoughts on what you saw from Troy last night up close and how important it is for him to harness that moving forward, or if maybe you think the emergence of a guy like OG Anunoby makes Troy fulfilling his potential a little bit less urgent if the question is, you know, this team reaching its potential.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was really good during the run. I think he scored seven points during the 28-0 run, which is impressive. No, I think you made some great points. He's most effective when he's working the baseline, when he's going at the offensive glass. He's not a guy you really want to put the ball in his hands in a half-court set and let him go make a play because when the shot clock comes down to it, you know, he's got to do something. A lot of times he just doesn't make the greatest of decisions. You know, you also make a good point on OG Anunoby and his emergence. Does it make it less important for Troy to kind of continue to get better? I think one of the take things that moving forward that we can watch for is how much leeway is Troy going to get from the coaches when he plays like that? Because if you've got a guy behind him, an OG, that is obviously given effective minutes, you don't say this to Troy, but Troy has to know subconsciously in his head that, you know, if I don't start doing things that help the team win more consistently, or, you know, if I am making mental errors that can obviously be avoided, am I going to get yanked for OG? And, you know, the fact that Indiana's kind of building a little bit of depth now with Morgan and Ann and Obi, I think can be a positive from the standpoint of if you're not making a contribution and playing winning basketball, you're going to get yanked. And that's exactly what happened to Troy last night. And perhaps sitting on the bench is the best recipe for him forward to kind of rein things in. You know, in a lot of ways, I don't necessarily think we're ever going to see Troy Williams be the perfect player that I think people want to see, you know, good Troy 95% of the time and bad Troy 5%. I just think his style of play is such that he relies so much on his athleticism and explosiveness that naturally he's going to have some blunders and mistakes that just happen because of how he plays. I think the thing that frustrates people is there's so many things he does that kind of seem avoidable, and he doesn't seem to always learn and get better from those mistakes. But you know, with a player like that, his explosiveness is such that he can literally take over a game when he's playing well. So it's hard to really say, you know, he needs to sit at all times or, you know, just kind of take on a reduced role. I think the best thing for Troy moving forward is just kind of, you know, we've said this for years, just kind of keep things as simple as possible. And when things aren't maybe going well, having those guys as a backup to be able to take him out for a couple minutes and not really lose a whole lot maybe is going to be good for the team moving forward. But, you know, we're so far into his career now that, you know, I don't know that we're necessarily going to see a turning point where he's going to consistently play great basketball every game because, you know, we are where we are and, you know, we're in early February of his junior year and if the light hasn't come on totally by now, I'm not sure that it ever will.
So, final question for you here, a quick look ahead. I think it's that Penn State game on Saturday looms as the definition of a trap game where you come off this big emotional high winning at Michigan, you've got that first matchup with Iowa sitting out there next Thursday, and here's this trip on Saturday to Penn State. You know, they're 2-7 in the conference pending their result tonight against Iowa, I think. They're 11-11. You know, they've played a couple games close. They kept it within 6 against Wisconsin at home. They kept it within 7 of Michigan. You know, but their only wins are against Northwestern and Minnesota. And I guess they kept it within 6 of Maryland. But when you look at them, they don't really have anything to hang their hat on. You know, not a great player. And yet, I can't help but be nervous about this game just because I've seen Penn State play us tough. You know, I and you both respect Pat Chambers as a coach. And I will say, if this was the Indiana team of 2014 or 15, number one, they wouldn't be 9-1. But I would be really nervous about this game because it feels like the kind of toe stub game that those teams couldn't get away from. The fact that Indiana is 9-1 and has been so adept at taking care of business, which is kind of the flip side of that, well, they haven't played anybody argument. Well, that's true, but they also haven't lost any really bad games, which is a big change from last year. That gives me confidence heading up there Saturday that this team will have the maturity to get it done. It doesn't dissipate my fear just because it's at Penn State, it's a Big Ten road game, and Pat Chambers' teams have a way of coming up and biting you in the butt. But how are you feeling about that game? It's just clearly a game Indiana should win. How afraid are you of kind of a toe stub loss up there on Saturday?
I mean, it's always in the cards as a potential thing to happen. I would say more than anything, this is a game Indiana has to win if it wants to have Big Ten title aspirations. Because if they could be 10-1 with Iowa coming to town, all of a sudden. Now you've got a chance to kind of get the lead in the conference. I mean, both teams, I don't know exactly who Iowa plays between now and when they come to Bloomington. I don't know if they just have the Penn State game or if there's another one between
that's
that.
That's it. Yeah, that's the only one. It.
Okay, so it's going to be, as long as Indiana is taking care of business, it's going to be a battle for first place. But as you said, they can't look ahead. You know, Penn State, for the struggles they've had in their chambers, I've thought they've always been an ultra-competitive, hard-nosed, tough team under him. They seem to always typically stay in games. I'm not necessarily sure that they're going to have the offensive firepower to stick with Indiana if they're hitting on all cylinders. They'll obviously maybe have a little bit of problems with Thomas Bryant in the paint. I know they have a big guy who's a decent shot blocker, but not great. Not a great shooting team. So, I think it'll give us some answers. Every game I think we'll learn something from going forward because, Indiana just passed a major test beating Michigan. Now they've got to show that, they can kind of handle the success and go on the road and win again. I mean, getting this one will put them to 5-1 in Big Ten road games, which is just crazy to think about. I mean, just based on what they did at Duke, I would have told you then that I'd be shocked if they win 3 or 4. But they've got this road game left. They've obviously got a winnable one at Illinois, and then they've kind of got the two with Michigan State and Iowa that are going to be absolutely huge. And I will say just from the perspective of covering this team, I mean, it's the most fun I've had, writing about a team and watching a team. Definitely since maybe the first year of Cody Zeller's time in Indiana, because that second season, obviously the expectations were kind of felt like they weighed things down a little bit, and it was maybe a little tense throughout that season because they were expected to win every game, whereas in the first season they kind of surprised a lot of people, and this team in a way kind of feels the same way from the standpoint of not a lot of people kind of expected much after they went 5-3, and now they're just kind of going out there and playing loose, and I feel like outperforming what the, I guess, readjusted expectations were for them after how badly they were beaten at Duke. So you never take anything for granted, though, in the Big Ten. I mean, there's always the possibility that you can have a bad game, and Indiana definitely has to go up there with kind of the same focus and intensity and get the win, and then come home with that game against Iowa, 9 p.m. Thursday game on ESPN is going to be absolutely nuts if everything lines up and both teams have one loss coming in.
It's going to be wonderful. Well, Alex, thank you for your insight. Hopefully joining us here on Podcast on the Brink made your drive go a little bit faster.
Yeah, it's always, as I move here through the great state of Ohio, actually not a great state, but I am making my way home, and it's always fun to talk to you, Jared. And also just a note to the listeners, last weekend, Jared and the Assembly Hall, Assembly Call crew was able to make it to Bloomington for the game, and actually, after doing I don't know how many podcasts with Jared, got a chance to actually shake his hand, meet him, and talk to him, which is awesome. And I just want to say we're appreciative of all the work you've done for this podcast, and it's been an honor to have you as the host, and looking forward to to continue to talk to you as the years go along about IU basketball. So it's always fun, and thanks for all you do on the podcast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying so. It's been a pleasure, and it was wonderful being back in Assembly Hall. It was wonderful meeting you and so many other people. And I think I told you about this, but there was a great moment where I got to meet Angelo Pizzo, who, of course, everybody knows is the writer and producer of Hoosiers. And he said that he enjoys our work on Podcast on the Brink, which was just about one of the coolest compliments that you could ever get from someone whose work we clearly enjoy so much. Right. Mr. Pizzo, if you are listening, thank you for that. And we definitely would like to get you on an off-season episode of the of Podcast on the Brink sometime.
That would be fantastic. I know we have another guest in mind that maybe we don't want to talk about just yet, but I think maybe one that we wrapped up maybe at our meeting there at Yogi's. So
yes.
Look forward to that one after the season as well. So lots to look forward to here on the show, and obviously with IU basketball the rest of the way. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yep, absolutely. Well, have a safe rest of your trip, Alex. Get home safely, and we will talk soon on the next episode of Podcast on the Brink.